A passage in Jude. I want us to go back there. I want us to look at that again because I want us to look at the wording in verse 7. Jude is giving a warning and a declaration at the same time. And he uses the historical facts about the people who had been taken out of Egypt, and angels, the Israelites who should have known God, the angels who should have known God. And then he gets to Sodom and Gomorrah, and you may think, well, these guys didn't know God. But they should have. And we're going to see in the lesson about that. But more than that, I want us to look at what he says there in verse 7. He says, just as Sodom and Gomorrah and the surrounding cities, which likewise indulged in sexual immorality and pursued unnatural desire, serve as an example. That's kind of the focus for tonight. They serve as an example. I want us to look through the scriptures. When I was started the study, I was surprised at just how often God uses throughout history, how often he has used this example, how often he's referred to Sodom and Gomorrah in the different situations that he has referred to Sodom and Gomorrah. They serve as an example. In other words, what happened is not something that is unrelated to us. Rather, it is something that we need to learn from. They are going to serve as an example for us, for our benefit. And so it would do us benefit to look at how often they are referred to and what situation they are being referred to in. But it says they serve as an example by undergoing a punishment of eternal fire. The example that they're going to be for us is the fact that they were punished. And that punishment, Jude calls it an eternal fire. And so I want us to consider Sodom and Gomorrah. I want us to consider the story about Sodom and Gomorrah. Generally, I'm not going to touch on every detail, but I do want to kind of cover the story of the account of Sodom and Gomorrah. And then I want us to look at some of the scriptures that have been throughout the scriptures, some passages that refer to Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, the first question I want to say is, who has never heard of Sodom and Gomorrah? Anybody here completely do not know? Even my grandson, who I didn't know could spell Gomorrah, read that. And he said, oh, Sodom and Gomorrah, right? And I said, yeah. And he's even heard of Sodom and Gomorrah. And he knows they go together. When you say Sodom, you say Gomorrah. They go together. A lot of times we forget about the other three cities that were in that area also, two of which got destroyed also. But when we talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, they represent all of the cities that were committing evil deeds in that area. These cities are infamous for their evil ways. The word sodomy is based on the unnatural acts that is attributed to them in the Bible. Along with the, I told you there was three other cities, along with Adma, Zeboim, and Zoar, or Bela. Those are the other cities that were there. And of course, two of them, Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 23, we're going to see that in a moment. We're going to go to that and read it. But it talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, Adma, and Zeboim that got destroyed. Now, Zoar was on the list to get destroyed, and because of Lot asking, please don't destroy that one, because I don't think I'm going to make it to the mountains in time. That's a small city. Can you kind of let that one go so I can get there and hide. And so he was told, yeah, we'll forego that one. We'll let that one not be destroyed so that you can get over there. And so that was the fifth one on the list that didn't quite make the list in getting destroyed. It was more than the two, in other words. But those two, when we talk about Sodom and Gomorrah, I think everybody knows what we're talking about, even if we don't talk about the rest of them. They're infamous for their evil deeds. They were all in the same valley of the Jordan. They were all together in that same valley that was destroyed. And we'll look at that. And they're not just famous for their evil ways, but for their destruction. The destruction that came upon them, the sure destruction that came upon them, the quick destruction that came upon them, the complete destruction that came upon them. When God decided that's it, that was it. And they are sure. And it's important that we get that point in our minds, because Jesus himself is going to use that point when he talks about them. When he talks about those people who see the greater miracles and how they rejecting Jesus, it will be worse for them on the judgment day than for Sodom and Gomorrah. For those who know about Jesus, says it's going to be worse for you. As sure as they were destroyed, you've got it even worse. All right? Jude says that they are an example of eternal fire. Now, they got destroyed. But throughout the years, throughout thousands of years, their record, they are still getting destroyed. The picture up here, that was up here, that was them getting destroyed again. It's eternal, their destruction. And that's not the only thing. It's not just symbolically eternal, but they're going to be destroyed. The people are going to be destroyed in hell. Eternally. Now, again, I've heard the argument that, you know, God didn't give a chance. They didn't get to know him. We'll look at that in a moment. A little bit of the background. The inhabitants were descendants of Canaan, son of Ham, son of Noah, so grandson of Noah. Abraham and Lot were descended from Noah through Shem. So, you know, they were related. Everybody was related to Noah and his family. And so they were not that far removed from Noah. In their travels with Abraham, or Abram at the time, he comes by Bethel. He goes by Bethel, and he goes down by Egypt, and he comes back up by Bethel a second time. And Bethel is about 10 to 12 miles north of Jerusalem. And if you go there on the mountain there, and you look to the east, by the Jordan, by the plain of the Jordan, that's where these cities were, near the Dead Sea. Right now, if you go there, it's nothing but death. It's nothing but rocks. It's nothing but salt. Nothing there. But at the time, the description is that it was well watered, like the garden of God. Lot chose this area to dwell. Let's go to Genesis chapter 13 and verses 10 through 13. Genesis 13, 10 to 13. Lot's people and Abram's people were having trouble, and they were getting into arguments about things that they, their supplies and stuff. And so in verse 10, Abram tells Lot, said to Lot, "Let there be no strife between you and me, and between your herdsmen and my herdsmen, for we are kinsmen," in verse 8. And so in verse 10, We read, and Lot lifted up his eyes and saw that the Jordan Valley was well watered everywhere, like the garden of the Lord. Now you look at that now and you say, boy, you know, it sure is not like that anymore. It says, like the land of Egypt in the direction of Zoar. This was before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And so Lot chose for himself all the Jordan Valley, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. And Abraham settled in the land of Canaan, while Lot settled among the cities of the valley, and moved his tent as far as Sodom. Now the men of Sodom were wicked, great sinners against the Lord. And so while the land was nice, while it was well watered, while it reminded people of the garden of the Lord, the fact of the matter is that the inhabitants were wicked, were very wicked, extremely wicked. As a matter of fact, God is going to come down and personally destroy them. And so Lot chooses to go over there and dwell in Sodom because it looks nice. In Genesis chapter 14, verses 1 through 3, we find out that a king, Chedorlaomer, in the days of Amraphel, king of Shinar, Arioch, king of Elasar, and Chedorlaomer, king of Elam, and Tidal, king of Goim, these kings made war with Bera, king of Sodom, Bersha, king of Gomorrah, and all these other guys. And here you see Adma and Zeboim and Bela, that is Zoar. And all these joined forces in the valley of Siddim, that is in the Salt Sea. Alright? And so King Chedorlaomer conquers these cities. And they serve him for 12 years. They pay taxes for 12 years. And then the 13th year, they say, no more. We're not going to do this anymore. And they rebel against King Chedorlaomer. So the king attacks them, defeats them. And he takes many spoils of war, food and goods, and he takes Lot and his possessions. And so I don't know that he took a lot of other people. When Abram goes, he takes back Lot, and it says in the women and the people, we don't know how many, but the fact is he took Lot. And possessions. And so a fugitive tells Abram what had happened. Abram and his people follow Chedorlaomer as far as Dan, and they defeat the king. And so they take back Lot, they take back the spoils, and they take back the women and the people. Take everybody back that they want. Alright? Now, later on in chapter 14, the king of Sodom is present for the conversation between Melchizedek and Abram. When Abram blesses, Melchizedek blesses Abram, and when Abram gives a tithe, a tenth of everything to Melchizedek, the king of Sodom is there to witness that. He has an opportunity to learn about this man, Melchizedek, king of Salem, who is a high priest of God. And he has a chance to get to know better Abram. And he works, tells Abram, he says, you know, I'll give you this, and Abram says, I don't want anything from you. I don't want you to tell anybody that I became rich because of you. Right? But they have a discussion. He has an opportunity, which he doesn't follow up on. We never hear of him using this opportunity, but he has an opportunity to know Melchizedek and Abram, and he chooses not to do that. Later on in Genesis chapter 18, angels are sent to destroy Sodom and the other cities. And that's the famous passage where Abram says, well, what if there's 50 righteous people? Will you destroy everybody, including the 50 righteous people. And he's told, no, if there's 50, then we won't destroy them. Oh, okay, well, what about 45? Okay, if there's 45, we won't destroy. What about 40? Okay, if there's 40, we won't destroy. What about 30? What about 20? What about 10? It's a sad thing that among all those people, in all those cities, in the plain of Jordan, there were not 10 righteous people. There were not 10 righteous people among all of those cities. Among Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah, Zeboim, and Zoar. Now Lot's family is physically rescued from the destruction, but spiritually, they're lost. His wife turns back and becomes a pillar of salt. She looks back. His two daughters are contaminated. They have habits that are worldly and wicked, and they come out soon enough. Sodom and Gomorrah, although they were destroyed, their influence still affected that family. We have to keep all this in mind when we start going through these passages that are coming up, these references to Sodom and Gomorrah. When we think about Sodom and Gomorrah, let's not just think about wicked people. Let's think about sure punishment. Let's think about complete punishment. Let's think about nobody escaping the punishment. Let's think about utter destruction. Let's think about no righteous people. Let's think about God giving them opportunities until it is time, and then He cuts them off. Now, when God killed them, He made sure they stayed dead. He made sure that area was not going to be coming back to life. He destroyed not only the cities, but He destroyed the area. He destroyed the ecosystem that it was in that area. He completely wiped out. You know, sometimes you've got a grave site, and what do? You know, you've got nice grass planted over it, you know, flowers growing there. So there is none of that for Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim. It's not. It's not covered with fertile soil. It's covered with a dead sea. How do you like that? Even the sea is called dead. The Dead Sea. It's the lowest surface on the earth. And you think about that. These were the lowest people, the most evil people, and they are in the lowest area on the earth. Where once there was abundant life and there was water like a garden of the Lord. Now there isn't any life to be seen. You can look up pictures of that area. It's none. There's no life in the sea. There's no fish in that sea, and there's none on the land there. Now there's great quantities of salt, 25% in the salt sea. 25% salt. One quarter of that is salt. No life is going to live there. Bitumen, sulfur, and nitrate. That's what's there. The climate is arid, and the heat is extreme. Everything is against life there. Whether it's the climate, the heat, the water, the land, whatever, it's against life there. God pounded them. God destroyed them. And He says, I want it to stay that way. Because this is going to be an example for people.
This is going to be an example of what happens.
I want us to look at some references, first in the Old Testament, then in the New Testament. In about 400 years later, Moses is leading his people, and he makes a reference to this. In Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 23, this is the passage that talks about the other cities that were destroyed. Deuteronomy chapter 29 and verse 23, we read, "And the whole land burned out with brimstone and salt, nothing sown and nothing growing, where no plant can sprout. An overthrow like that of Sodom and Gomorrah, Admah and Zeboim, which the Lord overthrew in his anger and wrath." Now, why is he referencing that? Moses is telling them, if you turn your backs on God, you're going into a land of milk and honey. Remember what the land was like for Sodom and Gomorrah before the destruction? It was like the garden of the Lord. You're going into a land of milk and honey, he says. Now, he says, if you turn your backs on the Lord, you will have the exact same thing that happened to Sodom and Gomorrah. Complete destruction. Not only complete destruction, but onward. It's not going to rebound. If you go to Israel right now, well, they're cleaning up a little bit, but most thing they have right now is a lot of rocks. They've got tons of rocks. Yeah, they're trying to make that place fertile, but it's going to be a long, hard process. God says, if you turn your backs on me, think of Sodom and Gomorrah. Now, Moses used Sodom and Gomorrah as a historical fact, not as a myth, not as some piece of fiction, not as some tale to scare people with, as a fact that they knew about. So if you turn your backs on God, you're going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah, and things are going to be completely destroyed. In Deuteronomy 32 and 32, we read, and this is a part of the song of Moses, 32 and 32 says, "For their vine comes from the vine of Sodom and from the fields of Gomorrah. Their grapes are grapes of poison. Their clusters are bitter. Their wine is the poison of serpents and the cruel venom of asps." He talks about people who have turned their back on God. He says the things that are good or that should be good are bad. He says when you look, the best you can produce is something bad. If you turn your back on God. And so Moses uses the example of Sodom and Gomorrah for them to understand that turning your back on God is not an option. Turning your back on God is not acceptable. As God did to Sodom and Gomorrah, he will do to you, he says. In Amos chapter 4, verses 11 and 12. We're pretty familiar with verse 12, the end of verse 12 there of Amos, where he says, "Prepare to meet your God." We do sermons on that, and we talk to people about preparing to meet your God. And he's saying that in a sense, looking forward to it, but preparing in the sense of being punished. But Amos chapter 4. And verses 11 and 12, he says to them, these people had done what was wrong in God's eyes, and God had punished them because of that. And they became stiff-necked and they didn't return back to God. In verse 11, he says, I overthrew some of you as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and you were a brand plucked out of the burning, yet you did not return to me. I overthrew you as I overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah. I punished you, he says. I punished you severely and completely and utterly, and yet you didn't come back to me. And so he says in verse 12, therefore, thus I will do to you, O Israel, because I will do this to you, prepare to meet your God. That's in the judgment sense. Prepare to meet your God. Prepare to meet your punishment. Prepare to meet your execution. That's what he's telling them. And so when he talks to them about Sodom and Gomorrah, he's talking about the fact that there were consequences to their sins. And that those consequences were sure. And they were had a purpose, but they still didn't follow that purpose. They didn't accept that purpose. So God says, okay, prepare to meet your God. Let me move on here in Isaiah chapter 1. There's a few passages in Isaiah chapter 1, verses 9 and 10. Again in chapter 3 and verse 9. He says, if the Lord of hosts had not left us a few survivors, we would have been like Sodom and become like Gomorrah. Hear the word of the Lord, you rulers of Sodom. Give ear to the teaching of our God, you people of Gomorrah. He's making the comparison, the fact that the people here are just like the people of Sodom and Gomorrah. Not, it doesn't have to be that they're alike in every single aspect, but in the aspect of the fact that they have been doing evil, and not just the people, but the rulers have been doing evil. He's comparing them to Sodom and Gomorrah. In chapter 3 and verse 9, same thing. If you go with me there. For the look on their faces bear witness. They proclaim their sin like Sodom. They do not hide it. Woe to them, for they have brought evil upon themselves. That attitude of trying, of going after sin and not confessing it. In chapter 13 and verse 19, he says the same thing about Babylon. Now he says it about Babylon. He says he's going to use Babylon to punish Israel. But he says, guess what? I compare Babylon to Sodom and Gomorrah also. He said, I'll punish them also after they're used to punish Israel. I'm going to punish them. And so as he's using these comparisons throughout the years, when he makes this comparison, it is an example for them, and they have to understand this comparison that they're being. I want to drive this point home as we look through these, because God is going to tell us the same thing. This is exactly what Jude is referring to when he says they are an example for us. The same way that Isaiah told them, the same way that Amos told them, the same way that Moses told them, the same way we read in Zephaniah, the same way we read in Jeremiah. We need to understand that Sodom and Gomorrah are not just, Sodom and Gomorrah, but they are an example for us. Sodom and Gomorrah represent certain things. They represent the brazen evil that's followed by judgment, that none may escape. They represent the horrible punishment brought about by sin, regardless of how God may choose to to execute it. Zephaniah 2 and verse 9. He says, I may do it this way, I may do it that way. See, it doesn't matter how God does it. The fact is that there will be punishment. And God will execute it the way He wants to. But He says, it's going to be like Sodom and Gomorrah. It represents utter ruin and desolation. As we see in Jeremiah 49, 18 and 15, verse 40. It represents sudden and divine punishment. Jeremiah 23, 14 and Lamentation 4, 6. And it demonstrates sin that leads in a downward spiral to judgment. Ezekiel chapter 16, verses 44 and 59. Sodom and Gomorrah doesn't represent anything good. It represents bad people who have a bad punishment, and there is no escape. In the New Testament, Jesus taught that the destruction was a literal event, like I said. Not a myth. Not a parable. Not a fable. Nothing like that. Not an allegory. But it was an event, a literal event. He says, as in the days of Noah. And he says, as in the days of Lot. And he's referring to the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. In Luke chapter 17, verses 28 and 29, that's exactly what he's referring to. And it's specific when he talks about that. A specific day. He says, the same day that Lot went out of Sodom. A specific day, a specific method or means. It rained fire and brimstone out of heaven. And a specific result, it destroyed them all. And so when Jesus is talking about in the days of Lot, he's talking about something that literally happened. And his whole point is that man must take God's warnings seriously. Let's look at a couple of passages, then the lesson will be yours. In Matthew chapter 10, verse 15, Jesus, in the limited commission, what we call the limited commission, sends his disciples out. And he says to them, truly, truly, I say to you, it will be more bearable on the day of judgment for the land of Sodom and Gomorrah than for that town. Talking about somebody who doesn't receive them. Those who don't receive them. Who don't receive the gospel. It will be more tolerable for them than for those cities. In Matthew chapter 11, the very next chapter, in verses 20 through 24, he uses a similar thing about the unrepentant cities. He says, then he began to denounce the cities where most of his mighty works had been done because they didn't repent. Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida! For if the mighty works done in you had been done in Tyre and Sidon, they would have repented long ago in sackcloth and ashes. But I tell you, it will be more bearable on the day of judgment for Tyre and Sidon than for you. And you, Capernaum, will you be exalted to heaven? You will be brought down to Hades. For if the mighty works done in you had been done in Sodom, it would have remained until this day. But I tell you, it will be more tolerable on the judgment day for the land of Sodom than for you. Those who have access to the works of Jesus, Jesus expects better results. And he says, it's not that Sodom and Gomorrah are going to have an easy day on Judgment Day. Rather, that if they're going to be surely destroyed, you're going to be worse off. Because they didn't see these works, and you did. You have no excuse. We have to ask ourselves a question.
When the Bible talks about Sodom and Gomorrah, and Jude says that it is an example for us, are we taking that example as it should be? Or are we just kind of fluffing it off? Yeah, Sodom and Gomorrah. Yeah. Old Sodom and Gomorrah thing. It's a very real thing. It's a very real example. Very real judgment that came upon him. Very real destruction. It's something that awaits those who reject God. Let me get to the conclusion here. Sodom and Gomorrah, a preeminent example of God's wrath upon sin.
To say that someone's sins are worse is to underscore the severity and certainty of the punishment.
If they didn't get away with it, neither will anyone else. And so the question is, are you washed?
Or do you have a certain fearful expectation? Ask yourself that question.
Am I a Christian? Or am I going to stand before God with Sodom and Gomorrah? If you're not a Christian, God says you can change that. He says you can hear the word and believe it. Repent of your sins and confessing the name of Christ. Be baptized for the remission of your sins. Remain faithful until the end and receive the crown of life. Would you like to do that today? If you're already a Christian, maybe you've sinned. You want to ask for the prayers. The brethren. Or maybe you're going through trials and tribulations. You want us to pray for you or help you in any way possible. Will you please come forward as we stand and as we sit?